Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey, welcome to Beyond the Scenes. This is the podcast that goes above and beyond the topics that you see every night on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah on Comedy Central. Now, this week marks the one-year anniversary. I don't even like the word anniversary because I don't want to keep remembering this thing. But the January 6th uprising that went down at the Capitol, the insurrection, a bunch of Trump supporters went there and lost their damn minds and violently tried to stop the certification of electoral votes by storming the Capitol. Even to say it aloud, it's surreal. So we have two people with us on the program today to help us break this down. The first gentleman is he's an Emmy-nominated Daily Show contributor, and he was there at the Capitol, and he's always there all the time, mixing it up with the Trump supporters. And if it's anyone that is not a fan of his activities, it is his wife and child. He is Jordan Klepper.
Yes, I was there with my Emmy nomination where I should be. Thank you, Roy. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Well, Jordan, our next guest is an Emmy winner.
Okay, all right. Winner. That's why you put it in there? That's why you put it in so, there?
I was about to hop in when you said Emmy nominated and be like, wait a second. But then I was like, oh, that's Jordan. Oh, that's Jordan. Okay, go ahead.
He is the host of MSNBC's All In with Chris Hayes, and the podcast is Why Is This Happening? Emmy winner. Chris Hayes, how you doing?
I'm good. I just am conjuring a very funny notion in my head of like Jordan in the midst of the insurrection and people like starting to get a little like chesty with him being like, I'm Emmy nominated. I want you to know, maybe you should back off a little bit because I've got an Emmy nomination.
Chris, I'd like to start with you because you get to exist in a place that you don't have the burden of having to find a punchline in between vomits of information to mm-hmm. your viewers. The revisionist
history. I just vomit straight.
You're just straight vomit.
Unleavened by punchlines. Yeah, that's what we're going for. Yeah.
The revisionist history that has happened around why the insurrection happened, whether or not we can vilify the insurrectionists, because like we're still at a point right now where they're still identifying people from the footage. Some have gone to jail. Some have been convicted. But they're still stitching some of this stuff together. I want to play a clip real quick of just Republicans flip-flopping their positions. Let's just start with our elected officials and their opinions of the uprising.
The president bears responsibility for Wednesday's attack on Congress by mob rioters.
We're so successful under President Trump. The last thing we want to do is be fighting among ourselves.
Trump and I, we've had a hell of a journey. All I can say is count me out. Enough is enough.
It's impossible for this party to move forward without President Trump being its leader.
So you think it was an impeachable offense?
Oh, sure.
How do you grade Trump as president?
Oh, listen, overall, I give the president an A.
When you lost Lindsey Graham, when you lose all these people, when Tom Cotton says it's time for you to concede, I think that you've gone over the top. He couldn't even use his own Twitter account because he's been justifiably suspended for the last 24 hours. There was nothing about that speech that was insightful, and the president also used the term peacefully go down there. He didn't just say go down there and take the Capitol over.
Chris.
Yeah.
When you hear all of that flip-flopping, and you see it every day on a regular basis as you prep for your Emmy-winning program. Chris, are we crazy? Just are we crazy for just trying to make sure people understand just how heinous this was
It's been a huge focus of the show for the past year, precisely because of the revisionist history. I mean, I think there's a few layers to it, right? One is that, like, particularly in the context of the American criminal justice system, the way in which policing operates, particularly on people of color, what we've seen with George Floyd, like the idea that people are going to turn around and excuse like mob violence after all this whipping up of this frenzy about it, you know, in the same moment, in the same program, they'll be like, hey, check out this smash and grab operation that happened that took a bunch of purses. Oh, and also like, it wasn't that big a deal when they like, you know, dragged a cop down the stairs and threatened his life. But so there's that aspect of it, which is like the idea that there's no actual standard for behavior, that like if you're on our side, it's fine, and if you're on the other side, it's not, which I think is like an incredibly Trumpian notion. And I think it's a conservative notion before that. And I think, you know, liberals can fall prey to it too, but it's on such display potently here. So there's the sort of excuses and minimization. Then there's the just like crazy disinformation of like, it was the feds or it was Antifa, like trying to come up with these increasingly ludicrous and far-fetched notions to essentially be exculpatory for what people actually did. And then the third aspect of it, I think that's really important, is people want to say, oh, well that, you know, some people will say, well, what they did, you know, obviously violence is wrong. What they did at the Capitol is wrong. But like the 50 members of Congress, the Republicans, the 8 or 9 members of the Senate that voted against ceding the electoral votes, like the entire project was insidious. The entire project was authoritarian. The entire project, whether they were like at the Ellipse and they were doing it peacefully, or it was just Josh Hawley, like
before they stormed the building.
Yeah, exactly. Like the like that is the culmination, and that is, itself is in a sort of special place. But the whole project was to overturn a democratic election and install an authoritarian leader over the will of the people by whatever means. Whether that means was Mike Pence ruling in a certain way, whether the means was, you know, using loopholes in the Electoral Count Act to get state delegations together to deliver the vote, like whatever it was, the whole project was rotten to the core. And you can't just say, well, yes, what they did at the Capitol was wrong. The whole project was wrong.
Yeah, but my thing, though, in a weird way, Klepper, like I understand politicians flip-flopping because they have a check behind the things that they say. They have a real motivation. The voters, on the other hand, who decide to go and be a part of this in spite of all of the, because people love to say, well, I'm doing my research. Well, if you had done a little bit more research, your stupid ass wouldn't be out here.
Well, the voters don't have a check, and they're probably not going to get one, but they do have an identity. And I think that's the thing that I see people clinging to. Yeah. The thing that surprised me most when I went to a Trump event in Iowa a few months back, and we brought up January 6th, like there was no coherent narrative as to what had happened on January 6th. Yeah. And some people, yes, what happened was wrong, and it was wrong because Antifa were instigators. It was wrong because FBI, CIA, NASA, any organization you want to throw out there. Some people said it wasn't wrong,
NASA,
like
dude.
That Ashley Babbitt was as a hero, and there should have been more Ashleys out there. Some people declare it was nothing happened on the 6th. And to me, again, that all has to do with, more often than not, when I would go out in the field and talk to folks, you don't need a coherent philosophy behind what happened or even a coherent narrative. You just need a foothold to get you to the next thing. And at that point, it was like, oh, you know, so much misinformation and BS has been spewed since that like, yeah, you can read something about the FBI, Antifa, you can believe it didn't happen or you can believe it did happen. It should have happened. It doesn't matter. It doesn't all have to fit. It just has to get you on to the next thing. And I for one, though, was surprised how quickly that information and those disjuncted narratives came about.
Thanks to online bullshit, they have a very interesting take on who was behind the January 6th insurrection.
Oh, Antifa, like the corrupt FBI, basically rhinos, corrupt politicians, the deep state, all of that.
But I don't believe that it was people like me and people like you see over there in that crowd that did it.
Who was behind?
FBI, CIA, Antifa were used. Other groups like that.
It seemed like a lot of them were going into the Capitol to attack Nancy Pelosi and perhaps
Who?
What's that?
Who? Which one? The one with the bullhorns? He's not. a Trump supporter. I don't care what his resume says. He's not a Trump supporter. In fact, do you remember the picture of the plane in Afghanistan with all the people running next to it? That was a balloon plane. If you look at the pictures of the real plane, there's pieces that are missing from the real plane to that plane.
So you're saying there's a conspiracy around the Afghanistan withdrawal?
No, I'm saying that there was one guy there who ran. It's the only guy who turned to the camera and waved his hands. Do y'all remember that? Everybody remember that? He's the guy with the horns on his hat.
He was in Afghanistan.
Yes, go look at the pictures.
I think he's in jail right now.
Did you go for the JFK Jr. dead body return from the death portal?
Oh, no, are you kidding? I'm using my frequent flyer miles. That one's on the list. I get more tweets about that. Of like, are you coming to this? Are you coming? It's almost like a relative now. People are like, you got to go down to Dallas. You know, your homies are hanging out down on the grassy knoll. Are you going to go see them? They're waiting for you.
I do think there's a little bit of a distinction because like that is like the hardest of the hardcore. That is genuine mass delusion in a really acute sense. I think that what's on display more broadly among the sort of grassroots right is also a form of mass delusion, but a little more
grounded,
a little more complex and a little more like grounded in familiar things. Like, it's funny what you're just saying, Jordan, there, because I've had this experience too. It's the mode of operating that you operate in if you're in the heat of like a bad fight with a person that you love, or like or an argument with someone, like whether it's a, you know, a sibling or a friend or a spouse, where like you're just churning through justification. Like you're just trying, like you're not you're just like, I won't concede, I'm not going to give in to you in this moment. It's like it's all will. You're not like, you're not conversing. You're not like examining the evidence. I mean, I'm saying this is when in like you're in a bad mode of sort of conflict.
It's all the toilet seat has been left up. Like, okay, yeah. But is that all you have right now? You're like, in
this
moment,
is this a relationship podcast
have.
Or are we talking politics? I'm sorry.
No, I just think there's like a collective defensiveness, which is like, you've put me on the spot and I'm not going to concede to you putting me on the spot, and whatever it takes to diffuse that. Ashley Babbitt's here. Like, whatever I have to say to sort of, when you talk about like getting to that next foothold, it's like
debate.
It's exactly. It's like, I don't want to concede because then I'm giving away some power to you, and I feel already oppressed by you. And that, I think, is the kind of operational mode of a lot of people in the kind of like MAGA core, where it really isn't coherent. Like, I mean, one of my favorite stories is like, and I'm sure maybe you guys have seen this, but it was like a few days after the insurrection, where there was like a guy who was in it who had to go on his Facebook page to be like, I see all these people blaming Antifa. I'm telling you, I was there. It wasn't Antifa. We did it. The Patriots, like, he's pissed off that Antifa's getting the credit for what he did and has to go into these like crazy disinformation networks that he is embedded in to be like, y'all, hey, I was there. We did it. Stop giving them credit for what these patriots did. And it was just a perfect, to me, encapsulation of like, they're really, your point, to get back to your point, Jordan, there is no actual coherent story about January 6th on the right. There's a bunch of different stories that are thrown out to move on to the next topic, distract or mass exculpate the folks involved so that you can get back to the real thing, which is that the libs are oppressing you in whatever way.
And that's what I want to get to after the break, because I'm curious about the MSNBC Chris Hayes news curation process, because we're always stuck at the Daily Show with, do we follow the crazy thing that just happened that's being reconstituted as something different, or do we follow the new crazy thing that is happening or is about to happen? And I'm very curious how you decide which ones to bring to light on your show. This is Beyond the Scenes. We'll be right back.
And in doing that, is that how you achieve an Emmy? I guess is the other question.
You have to sign up for the masterclass for that. I knew it.
Everybody's doing masterclass now.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Waiting on a tax return? Hopefully it ends up in your hands. Fraudulent tax returns due to identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. LifeLock monitors and alerts you to identity threats you may miss on your own, even if you're careful with your personal information. And if you do become the victim of tax-related identity fraud, LifeLock has U.S.-based restoration specialists ready to help solve identity theft issues on your behalf. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Why wait for your tax refund in vain? Help protect your information immediately with LifeLock. Go to LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 25% your first year. That's 25% off at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Identity theft protection starts here.
How are we doing this, Jordan Klepper, Chris Hayes? Are we saying happy Jan 6? Are we saying J6? Do we say never forget? Do we say always forget?
Yeah, I think it's just important to keep saying the date because I think 5 years from now, there's a legitimate chance we go from January 5th to January 7th on the Gregorian calendar. And so whatever you do, just make sure you repeat the date so people understand that it is a moment in time. Like, can we just agree a moment in time?
That day never existed. It just didn't happen.
Can you believe it? We remember the Alamo. Do you know what happened at the Alamo?
Yeah.
It was a terrible loss. It was poorly planned. Davy Crockett went down. The guy who created the Bowie knife went down. Like, that's a terrible story. We should forget that story. Poor planning on America's part. Yet we remember that. January 6th. We could take a lot of lessons from that, and we are trashing it as quick as we can.
I'll be honest, as a black person, I am closely monitoring January 6th to make sure that it doesn't bleed over into Martin Luther King weekend.
Yeah.
It's a little close.
Dangerous.
Could turn into a week-long celebration. Once it's a week-long, then it's a whole month, and then you got MLK in the middle of resurrection this month or whatever the hell they're going to call it.
Patriot month.
So, Chris, on your program on MSNBC, we just spoke about the misinformation and what motivates it. How and what do you decide to report on your show? Number one, just straight-up mental health shit, how do you stay calm just in the morning when you're just reading the headlines? How do you remain calm and measured as you deliver news that people are going to Dallas to see the dead body come out of the ground?
I mean, is it impossible to go and stay calm, Chris? Because we know you're going to go all in. Like, you have to. That's the brand. You got to go all in. And so in the morning, are you like, should I just go half of the way in and stay calm? Or no, this is what the people want. Like, Melbourne, he can go halfway in.
I am generally, I don't think I'm that calm, honestly. I mean, I think that what I try to do is, I definitely think that I've spent a lot more time telling myself the serenity prayer about, like, things I can control and things I can't, the wisdom to know the difference. Which is a big part of it. Like, I think that there are times where, because I do have a platform that I'm very privileged to have, it feels like that I have more causal, like, there were definitely times during COVID where I felt like it was my job to, like, save the country from the mass death of COVID. And
well, that's fair. Yeah.
I mean, but I failed. I mean, it didn't work. I mean, I think right now I think I feel that way about, like, American democracy, the way that I felt, I think, last year around COVID, even though, of course, we're still in the pandemic. But American democracy seems to me like, I feel in a similar way of just, like, ringing this alarm bell. Like, that's the thing that I have. I have the bullhorn, I have the alarm bell, I have the platform. We've been very focused on this story, generally the story of American democracy in peril, in a peril that it never has really faced in this particular way. It's faced peril in many different ways and wasn't really actually a democracy for the vast majority of the country's existence. So it's not like there's some, like, beautiful halcyon days to look back on. But what happened, I mean, this is the thing that we focus on, and we focus a lot on January 6th specifically, but more broadly, like, the fate of American democracy, is that it's hard, I think, in the same way that I think the first days and the first weeks and months of the pandemic were hard, it is hard to get your head around the scope and enormity of what you're dealing with. But, like, if they had pulled it off, it really would have been the case that the fundamental precept that undergirds this whole thing, which is that the people choose their leaders, not the other way around, and that a majority of people is what stands in for the whole when you're dealing with democratic elections, to cast that out you know, really would have been an enormous epochal break with what we've had before, and that still, that threat still looms over us.
Can I ask a question, Chris? Like, you talk about the insurrection was something that had been happening the week beforehand and was happening behind closed doors. Are you at all afraid that in the discussion of this and how perhaps the media frames it and also just the mindset of those who digest it, we're going to go down this rabbit hole and it's all going to be about whether or not Donald Trump gave the go-ahead to you go straight ahead?
Yeah, that's a great point. It's something I'm really trying hard to avoid because I think we saw that in some ways with what happened with the Russia story, which was like,
oh, we got him. We're going to get him.
Yeah, and also
meanwhile,
like, right. And it, but it's also like, take a step back. It's like they, the Russians wanted Donald Trump to be president and sought to aid his campaign. The campaign privately and publicly welcomed their help. Like, and then they committed a variety of very serious crimes to sabotage his opponent. Those three things we knew from the jump. Like, so, and then, you know, and understandably got into the Mueller. Then it was like, well, they didn't find this smoking gun where he, you know, called up Vladimir Putin and said, hack Hillary, whatever. It's like, well, he said it on camera. I mean, he said, we're going to go down to the Capitol now. He literally instructed the crowd.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol. And we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women, and we're probably not going to be cheering so much for some of them, because you'll never take back our country with weakness. You have to show strength and you have to be strong.
It was like he grabbed them and he bowled them, you know, down Pennsylvania Avenue. So I agree that it's important to keep what is publicly known is unbelievably damning. Would disqualify him from ever holding any position of public trust ever. And I think there's a plausible criminal case to be made against him under federal law. He certainly should have been impeached. He certainly should have been disqualified from ever holding public office. No, if we learn nothing new, starting now. And I think your point is well taken and something that we really try on the show to avoid, which is we're constantly resetting what are the publicly known facts and what they say about the danger of this individual and the movement that he leads and the threat it poses to American democracy, whether or not we find out even more damning details, which I suspect we will.
Chris, on your show, Trump loyalists and insurrectionists, you generally, for the most part, don't swim in those waters of talking to those types of people. Is that in an effort to keep the misinformation to a minimum and not allow people to use your show as a vessel for misinformation? Like, what, walk me through the strategy in that.
Yeah, I mean, we actually had two of them on the other night, and it was sort of interesting. We had these two folks that were the people that planned the Ellipse rally and are now cooperating with the January 6th committee, mostly because, like, they feel thrown under the bus by Trump, not, I think, for any noble reason above that. But look, the problem is, and I learned this, I come back to this example all the time, and I think my staff is probably tired of hearing about it, but it's very formative for me. Like, if you were in the left in 2002 or 2003, and you were in spaces, you were going to anti-war protests, or you were going to events, you were writing for lefty magazines, you were encountering 9/11 truthers a lot. A lot.
Yeah.
They were everywhere. They would get up and ask the first question at every event. And one of the things I quickly learned was, like, you couldn't get into a debate or win a debate with them because, like, there was no, like, they were like, what about this angle of this shadow of this? If you look at this lamppost by the Pentagon, it couldn't have been clipped by this wing and this engine. But, and all of a sudden you're just in
the
this
melting
world.
Point of steel that was made in that year in the construction.
And you can't, it's the same thing with, like, I think people that adhere to the big lie, you know, there it's like, you can't really engage on those terms and get anything useful. The other thing for me, and this is different than for Jordan, is, like, we have a live show and we have these time limits. And so sort of controlling and wrangling, well, no, it makes a big difference. Like,
you aren't lying. That's why
if
so
I could
funny.
Go and talk to people and then take all that footage and figure out what we're going to do with it. But I'm there on live TV. And not only that, there's a responsibility of that, which is that everything they're saying is going out to 1.5 like million them. People. And I'm in some ways responsible for that, right? So, like, so it's just a, it's a, it's a real, heavy burden you carry when you put someone on the air about what is going to be communicated to your audience.
So then, Jordan, how do you balance that? Because you do basically
the opposite.
You do the opposite.
Yeah. Let's talk. I've got on my nice warm jacket. Let's stand out here outside forever and ever and talk to these people. Like, what are you thinking when you go out? What is your objective? Because it clearly can't be to change their minds.
Well, I mean, I think Chris brings up a great point, is the difference between live TV and something you bring back and you edit, because it is true. There is stuff that is in the edit that is hateful or misinformation that we feel we don't add context to in our responses, and that is something we feel responsibility towards if we put that out. So there's control in an edit, and we take that all into account. I think, you know, we go to these events because, one, we want to know what are people actually talking about on the ground, what is getting through specifically for Trump rallies, what is getting through from on stage and what we hear in New York to the actual people out there, and what are we missing when we watch the news? Because, you know, these news hosts, they think they're so smart. They think they got their big Emmy award winning shows, but mm-hmm. until they get out there, mm-hmm. they don't know what it's really like.
That's right.
But our objective is, we go out with questions. What has seeped in? Where are people? What are they thinking? And we just go and we start to respond to that.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do they recognize you? Do they know who you are?
It varies. I think it's growing, but there's still, I will say, there's still a giant bubble. So more often than not, I go to a rally and most people don't. They're immediately skeptical because there's a camera. And so you're a bad guy because you're a camera, but you're also interesting.
Right. So they know they're making you as a member of the media.
Yes.
And that is enough in some ways to put them in a sort of somewhat skeptical place, but not specifically like, this is his shtick. He does this. He you know, is going to try to trap them.
Exactly. They already have their opinion about the media. It's either right. something that stay away, these are the bad guys, or these are the bad guys, I'm going to win with them. And whether or not I'm on Trevor's show or not usually doesn't come into effect. Although, then there is a person who's like, I've seen this guy's videos.
Right.
And we were at an event, a school board meeting, and a guy charged me because he was like, that's that guy. We have to have security come in and stop this guy, and there's an altercation there. So like,
oh, that's not fun.
I think it also, they don't like to be made fun of. What not January 6th, but 2 weeks beforehand,
does?
The Million MAGA March,
right.
which was a beautiful march, their number.
Not a million.
But but what people don't often understand there is there's probably 30,000 people there, but these are also poorly run events, go
yeah.
figure, which means there's two stages that are essentially a mile apart with 30,000 people in between, and the sound systems they paid for, can only about 200 people can hear what's actually going on. So you have essentially 29,000 people who are milling about, and when you're interviewing
right.
people, and perhaps the people are getting upset, or somebody's like, I think I know that guy, well then the two people who are watching become 10, become 50, and it becomes dangerous there. So even if you're not immediately recognized, we have to be savvy, because there is a mob mentality when you have a camera up.
Yeah, there's always something I find like unnatural and can sometimes be kind of foreboding about the role a camera plays in a crowd
mm-hmm.
and what it does to how people behave around it, independent of people's politics or, you know, ideological commitments. Just generally, I've had that experience.
Well, and also they're dressing for it now. We make a lot of jokes about the apparel at a MAGA rally. And what has become so fascinating is people are going there to dress for being on camera, for being recognized
right.
by Donald Trump or other folks. It's, you know, so like they suddenly walk down an aisle, which is essentially a dressing room and costume department. They pick out the most extreme points of view that are you could fit onto a t-shirt. They put them on, and what we started noticing too, and then they're starting, then they have to answer questions about the view that they just put on their chest, which
right.
some of them have that view, some of them have just adopted that view, and now this camera is starting to craft a narrative around that person who has this thing on their chest that they speak for, that maybe they just wanted that attention, but they're already now creating this narrative, which is only grown in the last 2 years.
Chris, there is definitely a lot of disagreeing on whether or not facts are factual. Therefore, journalism, when you report the facts, which is your job as a journalist, could be seen as an opinion. What say you to people who believe that people of your ilk, and I'm talking just primetime news in general, are based in opinionated journalism and not factual journalism? Is there a way to unblur the lines where at least, even if we don't agree on the solution, can we at least agree on what the facts are? Or it's just, if you're an opinionated journalist and you, if that's what I am to you, that's just what it's got to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a deep question. It's hard to talk through it because I've spent probably 20 years thinking about various versions of this, all the way back to being a philosophy major in undergrad and thinking about epistemology and how people form true beliefs. I mean, the way that I think about what I do is that I have a point of view and a perspective and a set of values that I have that I'm pretty transparent about. I really believe in democracy. I believe in equality, solidarity, rights and protections, the flourishing of people's lives. And I approach the news with those views. I'm on the left for sure. People know that. And that perspective colors what I talk about and what I don't talk about and, you know, what I choose to spotlight. We're really rigorous that we put things that are true on our show. But the thing is that, like, truth is only, I mean, there's a bunch of different categories, right? So, like, you can communicate untruthful stuff or false and malicious stuff without ever telling a single factual lie. You know, then there's people who just lie, right? So, like, oh, an Italian satellite hacked the voting machines to change votes. It's just, like, a lie. It's just, like, not a true statement, and it's preposterously not that. But then, you know, there's a period where Tucker Carlson was going around doing this thing where he was taking this open source vaccine reporting system where anyone could report an adverse event after a vaccine and saying, look, 1,200 people died after they got their vaccine. Now, or whatever the number was. Now, it was true. I mean, like, you know, when you give 200 million people shots, like, some set of people are going to, you know, get hit by a bus, fall ill, they have cancer and the chemo, like, whatever it is. So you're not saying a lie, right? Like, it is factually accurate that a certain number of people died after they got their vaccine shot. When you go on air and you say it in that terms, you are implying a causal link there that says these vaccines are scary, they're killing people and not telling you about it. And so, like, that line between, like, what's fact, what's opinion, what's perspective, it is actually pretty complicated, you know, because, like, you can say a lot of true things. It's like, here's my favorite example, like racist websites, okay? Like really, like, the, like, if you go to, like, the world of, like, Stormfront and by the way, which is, like, very adjacent to, like, a lot of Donald Trump stuff, and there are periods during different campaigns when Donald Trump would, like, tweet these out, like, you could run a website that only identifies examples of black men assaulting white people in a country of 350 million and just make that all you show. And it could be the case that, like, it is factually true that in each of those instances or each of the videos, what you are doing is running a white supremacist website, right? And you're running a white supremacist website without ever, like, telling a lie in some sort of, like, sense of, like, these are facts. I'm just showing you the facts of all the, but that's like Nazi propaganda essentially, which, by the way, they used to actually, like, run examples of Jews committing crimes. So it's like this question of what is fact, what's opinion. It's like the world contains so many facts that in some ways what's more insidious than lies, and lies are insidious, we see with a big lie, is which facts you choose to emphasize, which facts you choose to focus on. And so much destruction and so much ruin can happen based on which facts people choose to use their platforms for.
Emmy winner.
That was, yeah. I'm glad you took after that. I could feel that Emmy nomination just cracking inside of me. I'm like, yeah.
After the break, I want to talk to you all about where we're headed. I don't know if this is going to be a new holiday. I don't know if our kids are going to start getting Jan 6 out of school for their own safety. I don't know, but I am curious about where we go from here and the role that the media plays in this. This is Beyond the Scenes. We'll be right back.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Are you spending more time in your basement now that it's your rec room, office, kids' playroom, or home gym? Well, you need to ventilate those spaces to remove stagnant, musty air. For over 20 years, the Easy Breathe ventilation system exchanges dirty, damp air for cleaner, drier, healthier air. Take charge of your indoor air with your own Easy Breathe ventilation system. You can get it installed, or DIY kits are available. Just call 866-822-7328 or visit takechargeofyourair.com and receive 20% off today.
Chris, what would you say is the biggest failure in reporting as it relates to January 6th? Let's critique our media co-workers here.
I would say that one thing that happened, and I think the reporting in the wake of it's been quite good. I think one misapprehension people had when watching it was that it was kind of goofy. And I think that was because of what the cameras were showing as opposed to what they weren't showing. So because you have cameras in the galleries, you know, what you saw was like the Q shaman comes in and he sits on the chair and it all seems like stunty and weird, and they're all like recording themselves. And it's only later when you start to get the footage of like the cop who's being, you know, pressed in the door and Michael Fanone being dragged through and the body cam footage and the assaults and like, and then the, you know, Ashley Babbitt attempting to vault through that broken window and the gunshot that killed her. So I think there was a little bit of a misapprehension in the beginning. And I think it's probably stuck with some people. In fact, some people, I think Tucker Carlson's one example, have tried to like keep that going, like, oh, isn't this a goofy, funny, like, it's ridiculous to be scared of these people. What are you talking about? So I think that's a misapprehension that was pretty prominent in the beginning, but I think has been turned around. I mean, I think most Americans think what happened there was completely messed up. Like, I don't think the problem with January 6th is that people don't get that it was bad. Or, you know, I just think that there's the bigger problem is this, that fundamentally the Republican Party as an institution is radicalized against democracy, and that they have that there has been a slow, the institutions of the country have been slow to recognize that, and they have faced no political price for it among voters.
You've gone on record in saying that this should have been one of the craziest events in the last 50 years of history. Klepper, why do we care more about Kim Kardashian dating Pete Davidson?
What? I mean, what's the attraction?
She wore the Yeezys when they went out. On the date. Come on.
Wore your husband's Yeezys to go out with the new guy.
There's so many articles day in and day out of why don't we see more outrage towards this thing or this thing? And I do think there's an overrepresentation as to how many people are actually give a shit about democracy, and not in the sense of like, oh yeah, it's important. I'll say that to an interview or what have you, but like our interest in the political ramifications of what happens day in and day out. Most people I talk to there on January 6th, again, it's are there for the show and are there for the identity, and I don't think would even articulate seeing government as something that needs to play a role in helping them and or helping society. In fact, they've been outside of the whole political world for years, and it wasn't until this new character came in who welcomed them in that they felt they could be a part of it. But again, it became about winning above restoring democracy, creating a working government that could benefit people who are in need, protecting people, things of that nature. Like, that actually was never an interest to a lot of the people we talked about. It really was just simply about the gamification of the not only the election, but then what happened after that. And so when you're like, why are Americans more interested in this and not focused on how democracy is crumbling? Because we were never interested in democracy as an idea. We were interested in democracy as a bullet to put in a gun that we could shoot to win the contest of my team beat your team. And that's where I'm just like, oh, I don't think Americans are that into politics. Politics is something to utilize government so that its role can help you ultimately. They're right. Into games.
Or like civic work, you know? I mean, I think that's that, you know, it is very identity based. Mm-hmm. And I also think, look, the attentional imperatives here, to your point, like, are hard in a million different directions. I mean, getting people's attention about anything is hard. I mean, it's like, you know, we've never had more, there's never been more things tugging on our attention. There's never been things that we needed more focused attention on more. And here I'm thinking of the climate challenge, which is like quite literally the largest challenge that humans have faced since we started civilization.
If Mother Nature bought some Instagram ads and was an influencer,
right? Right, exactly.
But continue. Sorry, didn't mean to.
Those attentional questions are really hard ones. They're ones I struggle with too. I don't know the answer to them, but you know, there are a lot of people that are paying a lot of very close attention. There are a lot of people who understand what, how serious things are. And I think, you know, in some ways, I think there's an argument made that you've never had more discussions about democracy itself as a sort of topic of conversation in my political life, you know, where the issue about like, are we going to maintain democracy? Are we going to strengthen democracy is like an actual topic of conversation that wasn't really the case, I think, like 10 or 12 or 15 years ago.
What could we expect when it comes to the future of democracy being attacked? Because the thing that I find that's interesting now is that a lot of the people that stirred the pot in 2016 have been deplatformed. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the ways that these types of people can find each other and the hornet's nest can be stirred up is not the same. Trump is not on television as much. A lot of his cronies are not on television as much. So could they still mobilize like this again?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I don't know what the future holds. I know that Republicans have worked very hard to put people in positions to do and pull off what they were not able to do and pull off last time. You have the Secretary of State being primaried in Georgia. You got the Secretary of State election in Arizona with sort of like avowed adherence to the big lie, pro-coup forces. You got a pro-coup primary challenge of the governor of Georgia, right? All these people essentially, whether saying it implicitly or in some cases explicitly, saying like, I will do what was not done before, which is deliver power into the hands of the candidate who lost because I don't recognize the legitimacy of the majority because they're not my people, right? So I really worry about that. And look, at one level, like there's technical problems here about the way that the law works and who's administering elections, but there's sort of a deeper problem. Like I think about this old Yogi Berra line where he says, you know, they should move first base closer to home so there aren't so many close plays at first. Which is like, you can't, like, there's no, so like, there's going to be close plays at first wherever you put the base, right? It's like, if you have one of two major American coalitions mobilized against democracy with the belief that the other side is illegitimate by definition and cannot legitimately win, whatever happens technically around election law, like, matters. But ultimately, like, the threat is that. That's the deep threat. And that threat is there and growing. And so I don't know what it looks like, how it plays out. But look, elections end when the loser acknowledges they're over. Like as a function, as a functional matter, that's the definition of the end of an election. And that can't be, if there's a side that will never acknowledge that, then that we're in totally different territory.
So it sounds like we're fucked, Jordan. I think that's. What are you trying to say?
But if cooler heads can prevail, then it's going to be all right. And there's a lot of cooler heads out there. You know,
you talk to them all the time.
I talk to them, yeah. Let me send you some links. It'll put a lot of faith in humanity and our democracy.
There are cooler heads out there. There are people who did the right thing last time. And I think there's a lot of people in America who have a deep patriotism and civic, a sense of solemn civic duty, who did the right thing the last time around. I hope they're there the next time.
And I also hope that those people are having lots of sex and making more people just like them so that my child has a decent world. And that's how we're going to end this segment.
You end most podcasts like that. I feel like I've heard you really go to that well a lot, Roy. Just wishing sex upon people.
That's my go-to. Yeah. I'm just wishing blessings upon people. So with that, Jordan Klepper and Chris Hayes of MSNBC, All In with Chris Hayes every night on MSNBC. The podcast is Why Is This Happening? With Chris Hayes. One is an Emmy winner. One is an Emmy nominee, soon to be Emmy winner with all the hard work that he is doing out there in the streets. I wish you all a happy... Do you think we're going to have retail sales around the resurrection?
I'd take that. That would be fine. I would take just maybe.
I wish you a happy resurrection.
Insurrection.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm thinking about Christmas.
No, that's Easter.
Oh, yeah, okay. I'm a Christian.
I
think I've had enough.
Okay.
Thank you, Jess, for going behind the scenes. Hey, Beyond the Scenes listeners, if you haven't rated and reviewed us yet on Apple Podcasts, I need you to stop right now and do that. Drop us a rating, let us know how you feel, and write a review. Write a review, too, because I read those to my child at the end of the night because I'm out of books. Got to go buy them new books.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Don't forget to pack the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies for a post-lunch pick-me-up. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.